Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, ain't?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Pauly, and their dog Ninja.
Welcome to episode 91 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. My name is Jerry, and I'm joined by my wife, Tracy.
Hello, guys. Hope you all had a fabulous weekend. We sure did.
Yes, absolutely we did. We had our live event at Waverly that we've been talking about for about 4 or 5 months, and it couldn't have been more perfect. Great weather, sold out crowd, everybody was happy. We had History Goes Bump with Diane Student there. We had Mike Brown from Pleasing Terrors. They both did shows. We was lucky enough to have Dina Marie from Twisted Philly and Jeremy Collins from podcast we listened to. They came and kind of emceed the event a little bit, talked about the Potter and Love festival that's going on in, what is it, August the 8th to the 10th in New Orleans. By the way, you can get tickets by going to pottern.love and putting in hillbilly as your code, and you can save a little bit of money on the tickets. I think it's 10%.
Well, that's good.
But just drop our name. Tell them you want like an 80% discount. They'll tell you no, but it sounded cool.
Why not?
But no, it was a super fun event, and we did the live event, and then we went to Waverly Hills and did 4 hours worth of tours, Tracy and I did. Like, we were the only one that did 2 tours, and my feet killed me at the end of the night.
My back killed me.
There's a lot of steps in that place.
There is a lot of steps. Of course, I wore stupid flat shoes. That didn't help matters, but it was well worth it.
It was so awesome to be able to meet so many listeners from all over the country. I mean, literally, we had people from Wyoming, a couple of different sets from Pennsylvania, Wisconsin,
Texas, Michigan,
Tennessee, I mean,
that was crazy.
Virginia, Florida. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing how many people came from all over to this event. And like I said, we had fun, and you guys show up in droves. Zachary showed up with his
shower curtain.
With his shower curtain for us to autograph, which I can't imagine, other than maybe Martha Stewart, there's been too many people asked to autograph a shower curtain.
That's true. And he's so dang cute. Yeah. Like, I swear, he's so cute.
But now we got a lot of great pictures. We threw them up on the website, and we got a whole lot of stuff to tell you, because obviously this is going to be the last revisit that we're doing, Tracy and I, of the old shows that Ricky and I did, and that's Waverly. And obviously we planned it for this weekend, and it's cool because if you were at the show, this will be a little bit different than what you heard, because but it kind of won't. Because
I was going to say, what are you talking about?
Because then you went through the tour. And you got it. But for those of you out there listening, you'll get more to this story than what the people at the live show got, because we learned a bunch of stuff while we were at Waverly that we're now going to add to this show.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Because we never stopped. That's what we did. We never stopped growing for you guys.
Yeah.
But God, it was so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was a blast.
You guys make us feel like superheroes, and we can't thank you enough.
Yeah, and I know Diane and Mike feel the same way, and man, what an honor to be in the same room with them two.
Absolutely. And then you got, you know, Dina from Twisted Philly.
Oh, yeah. Dina was great.
Jeremy, who just happens to run the biggest damn podcast group on Facebook.
I know. It's cool.
I mean, it's cool. You know, we were surrounded all night by podcast greatness.
Yes. So. And we loved it. And we appreciate you guys so much for taking your time to come out and hang with us. And it was a blast.
So let's get jumping on this thing, because we've got a lot of stuff to cover with you. we're running on fumes, and you know that typically means a really extra goofy show. Because we didn't get back to the where we were staying at last night until 1:30, 2-ish mm-hmm. by the time we actually got to bed. And then we got up bright and early because, unfortunately, we had a funeral visitation to go to up in Louisville. So we got that knocked out, and then we came back and did a little interview that we're going to put at the end of this show. Chelsea from California has been a longtime listener. She had a very strange, group of occurrences happen in her house, and she reached out to me for help, and I have no clue what the hell to do because all I do is talk about ghosts, but if it comes to getting rid of them,
You say, shoo, ghost, get out of here.
Yeah, I have no idea. You know, leave that sheet alone. I just washed that. I mean, I don't know what to do.
I know. It's so cool that you...
Know people through this show. I mean, we've been so honored to meet people who, you know, we've been able to talk to, you know, the most famous exorcist in the United States. How many people can say that? But by the way, I didn't bother him with this. I thought that might have been a little below his pay grade. So, no. But I did have a listener that I know has shared a lot of information with us with being able to help in those situations.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I just hooked them two up, and we'll hear all about it in the interview. We'll be able to hear everything that went on. But it's a fun little interview just to stick at the end of the show and give you guys a little extra something. If you did come yesterday, you'll get something extra that you didn't get a chance to hear.
Cool.
So, Tracy, would you like to...
thank the military? Yes, I would. Military, civil servants. I mean, we love you guys. We worry about you guys every single day, fighting for our country and protecting us every day. It's amazing to me how you guys even do it. But I don't know. I just really appreciate you guys so much, and I know everybody out there does. But we just want to say an extra prayer for you, which we do every day, just to be safe, and thank you for protecting us.
And then, as promised last week, a new addition to the beginning of the show is we just want to make sure that people realize if you feel like you need to talk to somebody, you feel like you're in a dark spot in life and don't know where to turn, there are options out there. Talk to a friend. Your true friends will definitely want to hear what you got going on. You need that support in life, but if you don't have the friends or family members or don't feel comfortable, there's the suicide prevention hotlines out there. I'm going to give out the one for the United States, 1-800-273-8255. And as always, you can reach out to Tracy and I, whether it be by phone or by email or Facebook, Twitter, however you feel comfortable doing it. But feel free to reach out to us because we definitely would much rather talk to you guys and have a chance to help the situation than to find out later something horrible happened to one of you guys. We love you, your family to us.
Amen.
So with that, we'll transition into extended family, which will be our Patreon users.
We have like a butt ton of reviews and Patreons. Our reviews came from a fan for a long time, Goofy, WordPlayer70, Emmy Lee Newman, Dolly Online, Faded Rabbit, Monster Movie Man, B29000, Chief the Tool, Chevy C20, Bullmanda 90, Stitch Girl 0122, and Horse Crazy Mama. Thank you guys so much. All the reviews were really, really good. Except one, but that's okay. And then our Patreons this week is Anthony Ward, Jessica Young, Justin Podorf, Marie Payne, and Lisa. Thank you guys so, so very much for your support. We appreciate you. And I'm sorry Ninja was barking in the background. I hope you guys heard your name okay. And we just appreciate you guys so much. And like I said before 100,000 times, I know we keep repeating ourselves, but we absolutely love the reviews. We absolutely love the Patreons. And we just love all of you. So I don't even know what else to say. Just we love you.
Okay. With that being said, we got one more quick announcement. We have a listener that wrote us, said that her husband's birthday is tomorrow, which if you're listening to this on a different day, it won't count. But it's Monday is his birthday. And we wanted to say a special happy birthday to German Chacon.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear German. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, put a little bit of a country flair into that. All right, so let's jump into this story. As usual, on a lot of these stories, we will tell you what the urban legends are, what the stories are that are going around, and then we'll try to add some of the more truthful answers into it as we go.
Yeah, we found out a lot of cool information last night.
Yep. So Waverly started out as a two-story frame building on Pages Lane in Louisville, Kentucky on July 26, 1910. It was designed to hold about 40 or 50 TB patients. At this time, people who had TB were kind of like outcast in society, and they were pretty much quarantined, and they had to stay away from the rest of society because it was very, very contagious. So that was, you know, what they did. They just kept them away from everybody else. So they kept them in this hospital where that's all they did was treat TB. Now, tuberculosis is known as the white plague, or some people will know it as consumption, and they would call it consumption back in the day because your body seemed to be consumed because you would waste away to nothing. So that's why they called it consumption.
Oh.
TB is a bacterial infection that's caused by breathing in air that contains Mycobacterium tuberculosa. And sounds like I'm a doctor, don't it?
It sure does.
But the bacteria eats away at the lungs, and it caused roughly 2 billion deaths.
Man, that's terrible. Ooh.
So it was therefore known as the plague of all plagues. And as we found out last night, most people know about TB affecting the lungs, but it can affect all different organs of your body and not just your lungs. In the turn of the century, TB ran rampant in Kentucky, mainly because it's a warm, damp weather.
Yeah.
And as they explained on the tour last night, Kentucky basically is a swamp.
That's pretty much what it is.
Louisville's basically built on a swamp, so
yeah.
That's... You know, you don't think about it that way, but for its conditions as far as mosquitoes and TB and stuff like that, there you go. So it was thought that the best way to treat the disease back then was rest and plenty of fresh air. Most of the sanatoriums were built on hills surrounded by peaceful woods to create a serene-type atmosphere to help the patients in their recovery.
Yes.
As PRP and Valley Station, which are two different suburbs of Louisville, became overrun with the illness, they kind of outgrew this original hospital. And like I said, it was designed to only hold 40 or 50 people. And at the time they decided to build a new one, they were housing 140 patients there.
Right.
So like we said, the only thing they could really do at this point in time was to build a bigger hospital. Now, they chose land that was on top of a hill for obvious reasons. Like we just said, that's where you wanted to put these kind of sanatoriums for TB. So they chose some land that was originally owned by a gentleman by the name of Major Thomas Hayes. Now, this guy must have had some kind of ability that most of us don't have because he had a daughter and she needed a school, so he decided to build one.
Dang.
And like I said last night.
It's pretty amazing.
I don't know if this was a one-room schoolhouse or a one-kid schoolhouse.
But that's pretty cool, though.
So he builds the school, and he hired a woman by the name of Lizzie Lee Harris to teach there. And she loved the school, and she loved reading these, I guess, novels that were probably popular in the time, called Scott's Waverly Novels.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided to name the school Waverly School after these novels. And Major Hayes liked the name so much that he decided to name the whole property Waverly Hills.
Very cool.
And that's how it got its name. Now, back when they decided to build the hospital, the board of TB Hospital decided to keep the name because they thought it was cool. So when they opened a new hospital, it was known as Waverly Hills Sanatorium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because TB was so contagious back then, people with it, they couldn't be around the rest of the population. So if you were going to have a hospital with all these patients, and then you had doctors and nurses and stuff like that, you only goes to reason they're going to be around us, and they're probably have an excellent chance of carrying this disease also.
Yeah.
Therefore, if you were an employee,
you had to stay.
You had to stay. You lived there. There was no going home. When you came there, you stayed there. And the question would be, if you had to choose between that and some other job, why would you choose a job knowing you're going to be working around highly contagious patients and you're not going to have to live on the site? Well, the answer to that is this was during a rough time. There weren't a lot of jobs. And if you were going to provide for your family, you had to take what was available. Mm-hmm. So nobody was forced to go there. But at the same time, there weren't many options. And it was better than being in like the on going to the bread lines.
Yeah.
And soup lines trying to feed your family. Now, Waverly, because of this reason, because everybody that came there pretty much had to live there, they had to be self-sufficient. So what would that basically mean, Trace?
Well, I think they became their own little city, pretty much. They had their own zip code. They had their own grocery store. You know, anything that needed to come to them, that's just it. I mean, you didn't go outside the city limits. You just stayed in that one area, which, you know, I think is amazing.
Yep, they had their own water treatment facility, their own post office. They grew their own vegetables and fruits. They had livestock there for meats and dairy product. Like you said, they even had their own zip code. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty awesome.
Now, the strange thing is, at least I thought it was one of the strangest things about the story, is we already discussed when you came there, you stayed for the fact of spreading the illness when you left.
Yeah.
But yet they would have like visitation day for friends and family, and they would come and visit, and they allowed them to leave.
Okay, I know we talked about that last night, and that is bizarre. Why would they do that?
I have no idea. It makes no sense whatsoever.
It does make no sense. I mean, that's just, I don't know.
Because if those visitors can come and go.
Well, yeah, they're going to take it to everybody.
Well, why can't the employees come and go? Yeah. What's the difference between designation between one and the other?
I mean, I don't know, unless they just thought, well, you're only going to be visiting for a short amount of time, maybe.
Yeah.
That maybe you won't get it, and they're in there all the time.
Well, the new hospital would hold up to 400 patients, and as we found out, you know, earlier, that's a far cry from
the
140 that were being housed there. So it was the most modern, well-equipped hospital at the time as far as treating TB. Construction started in March of 1924, and it was completed October 17th, 1926. It was a TB hospital until 1961. About mid to late 40s, the antibiotic that actually would eventually cure TB started being tested and being used. And, you know, by the time the 60s came around, early 60s, it was pretty much eradicated. So there really wasn't much need for a TB hospital anymore. So they decided to close it down. And 1962, it became Woodhaven Geriatric Medical Service. It was basically a nursing home. It was closed by the state in 1981. So the place fell into pretty much the hands of vandals and the homeless people and teenagers. They were just looking to have a good time and party.
Yeah, and you could definitely tell that in there last night.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. In 2001, Waverly was purchased by Charles and Tina Mattingly. Tina's a sweetheart. I got to talk to her for a little bit last night.
Yeah, she was very
sweet. And they spent the last 17 years making improvements, and the plan still is. And they said they're probably about 10 years off as they're going to turn it into a 4-star hotel. But we were able to see at least one room that's going to be their meeting room that's completely been redone.
Yeah, it's so nice. And then you come out and you're like, what the heck?
You come out into shambles.
Oh my gosh, it's really nice. It's going to be real nice when it's finished.
So, why is Waverly haunted?
Well, why wouldn't it be? Yeah. Dang.
Tens of thousands of people died here.
Yeah.
There's your first thing. And some say that there could be as many as 60,000 who's died there.
Wow, that's so
but
crazy.
Urban, you know, that's more that urban legend stuff. We'll talk more about what actual numbers may be and why they don't really have actual numbers. The people that died there range from TB patients to nurses that committed suicide to the elderly during the nursing home years. So it wasn't all just the TB time that contributed to this. It's a little bit of everything. So, as you know, a lot of places that are severely haunted, there's usually some kind of tragedies or mistreatments or something that adds to that. And I think part of that is going to be some of the treatments. Now, we already talked about there was fresh air and rest were two of the main things that they felt like would help people get better. And, you know, when they built this thing, the whole outside terrace was no windows, so they could wheel people out there in wheelchairs on gurneys, set them in chairs, so they could just get fresh air year-round. That was the plan.
Yes, but some of those people were put out there in May, and they didn't come back inside till like the winter months.
Yeah,
I mean, that is crazy to me.
Yeah, so, I mean, literally stayed the entire time. That's where their treatments, that's where their meals, everything was taken care of. So, you got those, the porches, and that's pretty cool. They believe this method was the best method out of everything that they did. This was what was going to take care of the problem quicker than anything. As Tracy said, they would even have them out there in the wintertime. There are pictures that you can find on the internet, and I'll try to dig some up to put on the site, of people out there sitting and they're covered in snow. They took it to that extreme.
Mm-hmm. But they did say they did have electric blankets. So, as I also said, if it was covered in snow, hopefully they didn't get electrocuted with the electric blanket. But that, I mean, that's right what Jerry said. They went to that extreme. In the summertime, they would keep a fan blowing on you to try to keep, you know, a little bit cool. And all, but I just can't imagine.
And back in then, most places didn't have air conditioning.
Yeah, they
so
didn't
there,
have
therefore,
air conditioning.
Most of the patients weren't used to having air conditioning anyway. So they were used to the heat. And,
right. So they didn't know what they were missing.
Yeah. But, it you know, it's funny. They talked about they usually close down at Waverly as far as doing tours because there's no electricity in the building except for a very small part. So you're kind of got wind blowing in through all these windows and all over the place. So it was chilly last night, so you were chilly on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
But they closed down around November because it gets really cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there thinking, it's funny to think that they closed down in November because it gets really cold in there.
Oh, yeah, they have people out on gurneys in
but you
snow.
Had people sitting out there in December and January. You know, I just, it amazes me. And the electric blankets had just really started coming around, so they weren't even perfected.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I thought it was kind of funny. So, another treatment they had was to expose the patient's lungs to ultraviolet rays. And as it was explained to us last night, it was, picture this in your head, a room that has a giant heat lamp on it, like you would find at a fast food restaurant, over top of the food to keep it warm.
Or if you went to a tanning bed, is what she said.
Yeah, but it's like a tanning bed, but when you go to a tanning bed, you've got those long bulbs that do that. This is more of like a like when you go to a hotel room in the bathroom,
and
they've got that heat lamp in there. So this was just like a giant heat lamp that was on the ceiling that just shown down on you. So you would get tans and you would get burns and stuff like that.
What do you say? They could put like two patients at a time in there,
yep,
I think?
Two patients at a time, and it just depended on what they needed. Now, the problem, obviously, with that is ultraviolet rays, as they eventually found out, only go so far down. But as we discussed, TB can affect different parts of your body. So it wouldn't get into your lungs. It was too deep. Mm-hmm. If you had TB in your lungs, this was not going to help you. But if you had TB of the skin, or TB of other parts that were closer to the surface, it actually could help. And it was a viable, remedy, we'll say, to keep it, you know. I don't know if any of that's really a remedy, but, you know, if it helped, it helped. So other treatments, though, weren't really as nice as the getting a nice suntan or getting fresh air, even though it could have been cold. Some of them were pretty barbaric by today's standards, but they felt that they were the proper things to do back then. In some patients, balloons were implanted into their lungs and filled with air to expand them. As you can imagine, this sometimes didn't have the best results because if you try to blow up a lung and inflate it artificially, it's probably there'll be a chance, just like a balloon, you can overinflate it. And pop goes the weasel.
Yeah.
We also found out that another form similar to this that they would do is they felt like if you collapsed a lung purposely, which is very excruciating, by the way, but if you collapse a lung, that it would have a chance to heal because it wouldn't be inflating and deflating. Mm-hmm. So it would get rest and it could heal. That didn't really work. Now, it did work to a certain extent because TB is fueled by oxygen. So when they collapsed the lung, it cut off the oxygen supply to the lung. So in some cases, it actually did work, but it wouldn't for the reasons that they thought it would be. It wouldn't because the lung was resting. It was because it didn't get the air, so it could die off.
Mm-hmm.
So it did work sometimes, but, you know, it wasn't the only way. Now, the last way of curing, they would sometimes remove muscles around your chest and remove some ribs.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was to allow the lungs more room to expand.
Yeah, but they took out like 6 ribs.
Yeah, in some cases they did. But some people actually survived this. And part of it was because from the TB, as we learned last night, there would be scar tissue and stuff that would attach to the like the rib muscles and to the ribs. And when the scar tissue attached, it wouldn't let the lungs move and expand.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost had to do this. And they told us a story. As a matter of fact, our tour guide on our first tour that we did last night, his father was actually a patient there and had that happen to him.
Wow.
They removed the ribs and he was able to live a life. And I think they said he fathered 4 or 5 kids.
I must have missed that.
Probably.
I was probably looking around for ghosts or something. Because they said once you took the ribs out, though, you were kind of deformed looking in a way.
Right, and it was the same time she was telling this.
Oh.
But she said that because he didn't look the greatest in the world, he wouldn't really, I can't remember the term she used, but, you know, he didn't have a normal shape, so to speak, because ribs and stuff not there to give you a normal shape.
Okay, was it the girl tour guide? Because you said the first tour guide.
Yeah, the girl tour guide, but she was talking about our first tour guide.
Oh,
I didn't. So we had 2 tour guides last night, but the first guy is her best friend of the tour guide of the second one we had. So if that's confusing enough.
Yeah, okay. Well, I actually did hear her say that.
So it did work for some people. And once again, keep in mind, everything that they did, it was strictly for the purpose of trying to help. But then they also had people that would have TB of the brain.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were using shock therapy on those people just because they didn't know what else to do. And shock therapy was kind of thought to be a cure-all for almost anything back then. So they gave it a shot.
Hmm. It was such a sad place. I mean, you could just feel the sadness in that place.
Yeah, without a doubt. So now, let's jump ahead. We've closed down the TB hospital, and now it's Woodhaven Geriatric Center. And things really didn't get any better from here. This was basically a facility that was for elderly people that had disabilities and dementia. So it wasn't just a standard nursing home. They had shock therapy also used there because they kind of figured this was a way that you could fix dementia or some of the other problems. Because just like we said, we're talking the early 60s. That was still, you know, during the time where you're thinking lobotomies and shock therapy and stuff could fix a lot of problems with people, not realizing what we know today. They had also a bunch of the rumors of some very unusual experiments going on there, which I didn't really find anything else about. Budget cuts in the 1960s and 70s, and then all these horror stories of how patients were being treated eventually led to it closing down in 1982. Now, during the whole Waverly Woodhaven years, thousands died. Some say up to 60,000 between the two places, but as we talked about, we're going to try to get to the bottom of some more accurate numbers here in a little bit. But the guess through some people who have looked at the spikes up and back, they said listened to the tour guide last night, they said at its worst point, and there were spikes where there were times where there were more deaths than others, but at its worst point, sometimes a person an hour died there.
Wow, that's so crazy.
And they said that they lost a lot of the original records because a lot of them were kept downtown Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early 80s, there was some sewer problems from a company that was in town. They was illegally dumping into the sewer. It caused an explosion, which I vaguely remember because I was in high school back then. And it did a lot of flooding and damage to downtown. And most of their records were destroyed because they were being kept off site because they were closed. So they had to keep them somewhere. And so they don't have access to those. And they said they can get them out of the state capitol, but because of HIPAA laws, they won't release them to anybody because they're not family. So therefore, they really don't know. But there's been some people do a lot of research, and they say if they had to guesstimate, they think probably closer to 8,200 people is the amount of people that died from the time that the facility was open for the TB hospital and for the geriatric center.
That's sad.
So, obviously, you guys want to hear about the ghost stories.
Yeah.
The one thing I want to touch on before we get into the ghost stories is the body shoot. You know, it's hard. It's very hard when you're trying to use your main philosophy of rest and peace and fresh air to help the body heal. That's your main medicine. You know, the nutrition was a big one too, because they said the kitchens were open 24 hours. There were several, and they were open 24 hours a day because they felt like, you know, basically the guy said shoving raw eggs and milk down you constantly would, you know, be a big part of this. Instead of having these well-balanced meals, they were trying to do the right thing with nutrition, but once again, they only knew certain things back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, they wanted to be able to keep everybody in the right frame of mind, and it's kind of hard to keep everybody in the right frame of mind when a person an hour is dying and you're shoveling them past all these other patients. So what they did was they had an elevator that led straight from the operating room down to the morgue. And if something happened, they would just put them on an elevator and take them down there. But when you have a small morgue, which we've seen that could only really have six or eight people in there at a time, and you got a person an hour dying, that's not going to be sufficient.
I don't even think it was six to eight people. I mean,
well, they had four drawers or three drawers in the one, and they had three to four drawers in another. So, and I don't know how much of that's still original.
It is so small in there. I mean, you can barely even turn around, seriously.
Right, and which is kind of surprising because you're building a TB hospital that you know is the worst disease ever at the time. Why wouldn't you have a bigger morgue, knowing that, you know, you hope that you're going to do good things there, but the reality of it is you're probably still going to have a lot of people in the beginning. But so what they were doing is they had a maintenance room upstairs that they ended up turning into a makeshift morgue because it was a lot bigger and it could handle it. But originally, because they didn't want to see all these bodies being, you know, carted out past these other and destroying morale, they decided they needed to do something else with them. And they had basically a tunnel system that was used to bring supplies up and stuff. Some of the employees would walk from down the hill up it to stay out of the weather, because it's like I said, this thing's up on a hill. It's not an easy walk. And it gave them a chance to stay out of the weather and do this stuff. But as these deaths started really climbing and getting, you know, one an hour in some cases, they decided to use this tunnel to take the bodies down to the bottom of the hill where they could be picked up then by an ambulance or a hearse or whatever the case was. And this way the patients didn't see it and it would keep morale up.
Right.
That's why this tunnel eventually became known as the body chute. As we found out last night, there is like a ramp on one side and it steps on the other side. And the ramps ended up having a little railway system set up on it, like a little, you know, track and a cart. And they would take they would roll the body down there on it. And when it got to the bottom of the hill, they would send it, the gurney, back up on this track system.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's primarily, unfortunately, that wasn't the reason it was created, but that's what it ended up being used for.
Pulleys and the track were still there. I mean,
yep. So, I felt the need to talk about the body chute because it's going to play an important part later. That's probably the most famous. When people talk about Waverly, it's almost always gets mentioned with the body chute.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about some of the ghosts here. Some say buildings take in energy, especially buildings made of stone, such as this one. And anytime you're going to have as much negative energy as went on at Waverly, if that's the truth of buildings absorbing that, then this place has got all kinds absorbed up in it. once Waverly was closed down in 1982, the hospital became a popular hangout for homeless and teenagers, even some gangs and stuff like that. So stories began to kind of circulate about when people were up there, they would start to hear children's voices. They could hear all these sounds coming, particularly from the rooftop. That's pretty echoey type place. So, and there's no electricity at this time, so there wouldn't be any noise. And this is before cell phones. And you'd have to take a radio up there if you wanted to make any noise with the batteries and stuff in it. And they would then they started hearing these loud bangs and footsteps in the building. Lights were starting to be seen in rooms where there was no electricity. Most people kind of dismissed these stories initially because, you know, it's a bunch of teenage kids partying and drinking. Who's going to believe anything they got to say? But then some residents of Louisville who hadn't even been inside the facility started seeing apparitions just while they were walking by or driving by. Some of the stories that they started hearing now from these teenagers had a little more credibility when people who hadn't even been inside the building are sitting there telling you all these things are happening. So here's some of the stuff that people saw. They saw a woman with her arms and legs chained running out of the front entrance of Waverly. And she looked like she was trying to escape from something.
Right.
And then she was screaming and... like I said, these people would just happen to see this as they're riding by. And, you know, they would call and report it to police or whatever, and then there would never be anybody there. So that's how these stories really started taking the credibility, when they start people start calling police and stuff like that, and these are reputable people, not teenagers.
Yeah.
So other reports said there was a little girl that would be staring out the third floor window. As people would drive by, they would just see somebody up there. So obviously they think there's a kid up there, and in reality there probably wasn't. Some of these people who actually dared to go into the structure, they claimed to see a little girl on the third floor, a lot of times playing hide and seek. And this little girl is known as Mary. She sometimes plays with a ball, and she ignores visitors, just goes on her merry way. Other times she eerily kind of stares at people. And there's even been some cases where people say she rushes up to them, and then when she gets there, she has no eyes.
Ew. I'm glad we didn't see that last night.
Just black sockets is what they say.
No, I would have crapped my britches.
Now, there's also Timmy. Most people are kind of familiar with Timmy. Timmy is supposedly a little boy that was around 6 or 7 years old who died back when it was a TB hospital. He's usually hanging out on the fourth floor. And Timmy always plays with a ball and will sometimes play a little catch with you if you're a visitor, by rolling a ball back and forth to you. There's a bunch of videos on Facebook of people doing this. I said Facebook, but I meant YouTube. And a lot of visitors will bring balls up there to try to communicate. Where some places, you would take like a Ouija board or something like that to try to communicate. People bring balls up here. Of course, Ouija boards are not permitted at Waverly. That's one of the no-nos. You can't bring a Ouija board up there.
Hell no.
But you can bring balls and stuff. And
I think we had a person that did that.
Yeah, we had a, we had some people bring a ball up there to play with Timmy. So you can play with him as far as rolling a ball back and forth. And then there's obviously you've got a sound of him laughing that people claim that they've caught EVPs of. They've caught on regular tape. And as far as just being in the area, you can hear him. But that's always up on the fourth floor. So now you got the kitchen. Now, the kitchen, a lot of times, there will be a man in a white jacket. I guess more like a chef's type jacket or something like that, that people will see roaming around that area. And a lot of times, you can smell fresh baked bread.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot, actually.
And there's obviously nothing left of the kitchen.
There's nothing left of anything.
And Louisville Ghost Hunter Societies, back in the day, they actually experienced this whole bread thing firsthand. They said that they were all alone in the building. They were the only ones. This goes back to probably 16, 17 years ago. They were all alone. This kitchen was in shambles. As you could tell, there's debris everywhere. And they hear footsteps. Then they hear a door slam. And then right after that, they can smell the fresh baked bread.
Oh.
That's pretty cool.
That's like very cool.
It's like being at Subway.
Oh, yeah.
So now there's an elderly woman. She kind of roams around the hospital. She's moaning, and she's bleeding from her chained-up hands and feet. She cries for help, but she runs away screaming in terror as soon as somebody gets close to her. And most people assume she's probably from the geriatric hospital days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a story of a homeless man and his dog, which we talked about last night at the live show, but we found out more details last night, so we'll add that. But the rumor is, and they wouldn't confirm this last night, they kind of beat around the bush, but the rumor is that he was pushed down an elevator shaft. Tina Mattingly, the owner, she says that she has seen this man and this dog several times. She always calls for the dog, and the dog won't come to her, but it just disappears in an instant. Doesn't fade away. It's just gone. I know the first tour guide we had last night, who's been doing this for 17 years, said he's never seen the dog, but he's heard
him bark,
him barking and stuff, and he can kind of track it down, but he can't ever really catch up to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we were at the room where this supposedly happened, and there's an urban legend about some Satan worshiping and stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the tour guide couldn't confirm this, but he told a cool story, and it led you to believe, you know, the urban legend's probably true. So he said he was doing a tour, and it was a guy and his girlfriend, and he said the girlfriend was really into the stuff. The guy really wasn't. I'll shorten the story. And as they were sitting there, you got this elevator, then you got an L-shaped room that dead ends behind it.
Mm-hmm.
He said the guy moseyed himself in the room during the tour, and then he got extremely scared. He screamed. He ran out of the room as fast as he could and ran straight into a wall. Which they make you do this tour in the dark, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it is completely dark.
You don't get to use your phone or flashlights until they tell you you can, and you're in the complete darkness. So this guy ran straight out, ran straight into a wall. He said he asked him what kind of drugs he was on, because why else would you do that?
Right.
And he said the guy said, I got to the end of the room, and there was a tall guy, and he was wearing a trench coat, and he had long, stringy blonde hair, and he turned around and looked at me, and when he did, he didn't have any eyes. He just had big, black, gaping holes. And the tour guy said that you wouldn't normally think much of that. He said, but the homeless man that was found dead with his dog in that area was 6'4", had long, blonde, stringy hair, and always wore a trench coat, even in the summertime. And the fact that he had died there was not common knowledge, so this guy would have had no way of knowing that description.
Wow, that's so creepy.
And the part that I was talking about, the urban legend, the rumor is that there was some satanic rituals going on up there. When someone asked about that last night, about how he actually died, the only thing that the tour guide would say was, all I can tell you is it was in this area, this is where he was found, and it appeared to be ritualistic. And that's all that he said.
Yeah, that's it.
So, sounds like a lot of those rumors may actually be true. So now let's jump up to the fifth floor. The fifth floor is much more sinister than the other floors, and it might actually be the most haunted floor. It's also the floor that probably has the most urban legends to it. The fifth floor, as we found out last night, was one side was like patients that had kind of gone clinically insane because TB had been in their brains. And then the other side was children.
Mm-hmm.
And we found it odd, and he even pointed out last night, it's probably not the best mix to have people who are insane on one side and children on the other side. It's probably not a good mixture. This is also the part of the hospital that has the most famous room that almost any Waverly fan out there knows about, which is room 502. Visitors to room 502 feel despair as soon as they walk in. People claim to hear whispers. They see shadows of people just outside of their line of vision. Visitors have had the door slammed shut on them, trapping them inside. Visitors have been told to get out. And why is this? Well, 502 has a really dark past. 1928, the story is that a young nurse was found hanged in the room, and the story is that she was pregnant by a doctor, and she was ashamed during the this time, you know, back in the late 20s, early 30s, if you were pregnant out of wedlock, I mean, that was, you know, something that just didn't happen, and that's why she hung herself. What we found out last night is it kind of happened, but not exactly like that. So the nurse was found hanging, but it wasn't in room 502. It was right outside room 502 in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So it was only literally, you know, 5, 6, 7 steps away from where, but she was hanging from a light fixture out there. Was she pregnant? According to them, she was not pregnant at the time that she died. But they did find the baby in like a sewer setup that they had there, because each floor obviously had its own little sewer system. But in the water treatment facility or something of that sort, they did find the baby. They don't know if she delivered full term, and maybe it was a postpartum thing where she was so depressed that she died, or, you know, took her own life because she was so, you know, fretted so much over the loss of her baby. But they did verify that she did have TB at the time.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting thing was when we all came up to that floor and we were standing outside of that room. I mean, there was a bunch of us, and we were all standing around, and then there was this, you know, empty spot.
On the floor.
And the tour guide said, you know, it's interesting that nobody is standing there with as many people as there is in this room. And then she went on to tell us that that's exactly the spot where she hung herself. But literally nobody was standing in that spot at all. And it actually it happened on the second tour too, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, on the second tour, same thing. There was just that, I mean, it was literally like a crowd of people. It looked like a donut.
Mm-hmm.
You get a crowd of people with a hole right in the middle, and that hole was exactly where she had hung herself.
And it's just really weird because you're thinking, well, you know, that's just happened. That was just luck or whatever. Then we went on the second tour, and it was the exact same thing. Nobody was standing in that spot.
The other funny thing that we found out, that room 502 was a bathroom. It's not, most people think it was, I've heard it was a nurse's station. I've heard it was just a patient's room. But the reality of it is room 502 was a bathroom. It had some lockers set up. It had some showers, and it had a couple of toilets set up. The 502 was the bathroom for the clinically insane patients. And the other bathroom, which I think was 506, the other room, was for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So this was just a bathroom, basically. But it's a decent-sized bathroom. But
yeah.
Now, the other story, and they didn't really clarify this. I should have asked this question last night. But supposedly 4 years later, 1932, another nurse either jumped from the roof of 502 or was pushed. There's stories both ways. So who knows what really happened, but that was the story. Let's get back to the young lady that hung herself.
Mm-hmm.
They did say there was a little bit of conspiracy theory, some people thinking that maybe a doctor who was married had gotten her pregnant.
Yeah.
And that was his baby. And maybe she was killed because of that and then hung out there to make it look like she hung herself. But in reality, maybe that was just a,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to make it look like she hung herself when somebody might have actually killed her.
Well, so, I know, but how are you going to do all that with as busy as this hospital was?
Well, I mean, you're up on the floor where most of the patients are not right in their head, so
that's true.
You could probably pull that off if you wanted to. But they say that you can see a woman dressed in white like a nurse before World War II roaming around up there, and it could be one of these nurses.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about most of the haunted stuff on here, and, you know, they didn't touch on this last night, but we're going to talk about the creeper.
Oh, yeah.
Last but not least, obviously the creeper, but some believe shadow people are evil entities to begin with. What's at Waverly is way more darker than just a shadow person. The Creeper is a shadow spirit that's rarely seen at Waverly, but it's got a pretty damn creepy feeling of doom and despair felt by anybody who does actually cross its path. It crawls along the floor, it crawls up the walls, it crawls on the ceiling. So if you spot the Creeper at Waverly, it's one of the most frightening encounters that a person could actually have there. Many people believe the Creeper is an inhuman entity, a malevolent spirit that's definitely not of this earth. And it's said that demonic entities are attracted to locations that may have a lot of spirits, and Waverly would definitely be one of those places.
Mm-hmm.
So it could feed on the energy of these dead spirits.
But it was cool because we did see some shadow people.
Yes, we did. And we're going to talk about that in just a second because I want to give it its own little segment. So with the Creeper, maybe it's something altogether different than just a malevolent entity. Could be some kind of ancient spiritual entity that we just don't know a lot about. And perhaps we never will.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some people have called it Big Black. Some people call it the Creeper. There's all kinds of different things. But they didn't touch on that at all last night.
Yeah, that's one. I wonder why they didn't.
I don't know. But I would say the highlight of the night was they took us down to the, was it the fourth floor?
I think it's the fourth floor, yes.
They took us down to the fourth floor. Complete darkness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a full moon, and you get a little bit of that ambient light through, so you mm-hmm. see a little bit. But they were teaching us how to see shadow people on that floor.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a long, straight corridor. You could see all the way at the end, which is probably length of a football field, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little less. But you could see an opening of the door where it was a little lighter than the rest of it. So if somebody walked down that hallway, you could kind of see their outline,
mm-hmm.
but it, you know, when you're looking at you know, that much darkness,
yeah.
you lose it really quick after they get, you know, it's like trying to drive in intense fog. The visibility is just
right.
not that good. And they were asking for volunteers who couldn't see it. They would just say, hey, you know, he enlikened it, and it's funny because I was already thinking the same thing. Back years ago, they had those 3D puzzles that would just look like, you know, just a bunch of colors and stuff. But if you kind of stared
mm-hmm.
and kind of lost focus a little bit, an image would come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how they told you had to see these things. That if you looked and studied and just stared real hard.
If you tried hard, you're not going to
see it. Yeah, you're not going to see it. You kind of got to look and use your peripheral vision. And so we went down there and we would look, and you could kind of see things changing down there, like stuff interrupting the light, and there was nobody else in there. And it wasn't a lot of light to begin with.
Oh, no. Uh-uh.
You know? But you could see stuff move in front of it. And it's like everybody saw it at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah,
you
it
know?
Was so scary.
And they weren't, the guides weren't leading you saying, do you see this? Do you see this? They would just basically say, keep watching. And you would hear everybody at one time, 25 people would just go, oh, I just seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were some people who didn't see it.
Yeah,
though.
There was. There were some people that couldn't see.
So he asked for volunteers to walk down the hall. And as they would walk down the hall, everybody else watching them could see stuff like almost being attracted to them.
Mm-hmm.
And
your crazy sister was one of them.
Yeah. And then, and every one of these people said the same thing. How does it feel down there? It feels colder here
mm-hmm.
than it does the rest of the places. And it's no different than the rest of where
no,
we was. So
no.
There's no reason why it wouldn't be any colder. And then as they would walk back, he would say, straighten your arm out like you're you know, doing an airplane thing. Just hold your hand straight out, arms, and walk. And then he just looked and said, do you notice anything about the arms? And everybody was like, they're longer. They look longer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that just started happening about a year and a half ago.
No way.
That, you know, it wasn't something that happened before. But, yeah, everybody notices that. But you can see all this different shadow stuff. No, is it an optical illusion? I don't know, but if it is, everybody was seeing it.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it was the craziest thing ever. I mean, it freaks you out too.
Some people said that they felt like, you know, they were being pushed in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that one guy said that, but it was really weird. It was, I think that was the coolest part of the tour for me.
Yeah, I think so.
You could really, really see that. And then we had an incident. I don't know what floor we were on, but
we were in the operating room.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And again, I think it had something to do with Becky. I don't know, but Her and Kim were standing over by this heavy door.
And she says that like y'all know who they are. Becky's my sister, and Kim is my cousin.
Sorry. And this door is like heavy, rusted metal. I mean, it was heavy. And we were completely in the dark then too, I think, weren't we?
Yeah, I mean there was enough light where we could see each other, but it was like standing outside.
Right. All of a sudden, that big butt door closed. And I'm telling you, everybody screamed. Becky was still there. Becky said she turned around and Kim was gone. Kim had ran over to Jerry and about pulled his arm out of his socket. And, I mean, it was weird because there was nobody there. Like there was, the only person there was Becky and Kim.
Yeah, there's no electricity
in
this part of the hospital at all. So there was nothing set up. Everybody walked over there and looked at the door after it happened.
Yep.
Now, the tour guide made it like it was no big deal. It happens. And his exact words were, yeah, that happens sometimes. Sometimes it's paranormal. Sometimes it's not. We don't know. You know, when it is, when it's not. But this door scrapes the concrete ground. So when it closed, it sounded like when a railroad...
A train. Yeah, like a screeching noise.
Yeah, the screeching, like when that metal on metal. And because this thing scrapes, so it's not even... It doesn't even close easy. But they had people go over there and try to close the door, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, man,
but it closed on its own while we were sitting there talking, and there was nobody over there.
Yeah, everybody was against the wall. I don't even know why Becky was over there. I mean, she was being brave balls last night or something.
Yeah, but she was over there right next to it when it happens, and she said flat up there was nobody outside that door.
Yeah, so that was scary. I mean, everybody like screamed and jumped and everything like that. But that was another cool thing that happened.
Yeah, but I want to thank Scott Thornhill. Scott runs a batting cage in Louisville. We've known Scott for a long time. He hooked us up with a cruise back when I was doing comedy. But my sister and Kim that we just talked about actually went on that cruise. This is, what, 6 years ago? Seven years ago? And, you know, he owns some batting cages and stuff in not too far from Waverly. And his family has lived there forever. His dad had access to a lot of stuff from Waverly. And he decided, since he knew I loved the stuff and we had the show coming up, he wanted to give us something special. So what he gave us was a metal clipboard that the doctors would use at Waverly, and it still had some papers in it. They were like mechanics type paper or maintenance people wouldn't, you know, patient stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't
stuff.
Like patient info or nothing.
And then he gave us a book that's from the Waverly Library. It's got a stamp on it. I threw some pictures up that already on the page. But when you flip it open, just like any library book, it's got the little card and the little pocket that holds it. And the dates checked out are like from 1951, 1952.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, really cool. And then he gave us a metal bedpan. So he gave us three items from Waverly. It was awesome. And I will cherish these things because they meant a lot. And then we gave away a sign at the live event that had all the podcast on it. We all signed it. And we put all the tickets in the bedpan and drew for it. I made Dina from Twisted Philly draw for it out of the bedpan. So we had some fun with it. But it's really cool to be able to own some history like that. I hope nothing's attached to it.
I know. I was thinking that same thing, man. That'd be pretty crappy if we brought some home in that bedpan. No pun intended.
That's true. But that's true.
A bedpan. Would you believe it?
Yeah.
That would just be our luck. Oh, my gosh.
So that was kind of cool. And then we had another surprise. Kevin Cummings from the Kentucky State Penitentiary brought us this coin that weighs, it's got to weigh 3-4 ounces at least. I mean, it's this big golden coin, and it's got a picture of the state penitentiary on it. And on the edge of it, it's got the names of employees there, guards there, that actually died in the line of duty etched on it. One of them was his relative. So that was so cool.
Yeah, meant so much to us. That is really, really nice thing.
Yeah, I put a picture of that up. That's already up on the site. And then last but not least, my friend Bree from Nashville, who will be at our Nashville show that we end up doing in October with the guys from Graveyard Tales. She has her own company where she makes horror man, I need to say that better, horror-related candles and melts. And, I mean, she does, like, melts that are in the shape of Michael Myers and Jason and stuff like that. So it's really cool stuff. But she reached out and said, hey, I want to make a candle for you guys and some melts. And these things turned out fantastic. They smell so good. I chose the smell. It's monkey farts. And in case you don't know what monkey farts smell like, it's a mixture of like banana, coconut, pineapple, anything a monkey would eat. They put this thing together. It smells so damn good.
Oh my God. And it's so adorable. It's got glitter.
Yep.
Like on the wax. It's just...
It's got the wax, and then the top layer's got glitter on it. Didn't come across as cool in the picture as what it really is, but
yeah, it's beautiful.
She's got these things for sale and at her Etsy page, so I'm going to go ahead and post that, but the name of the company is Macabre, M-A-C-A-B-R-E, Melts. So look that up, and those are going to be available starting tomorrow on her website, so check that out. And if you don't like that one, she's got all kinds of other cool stuff. But yeah, go check her out, man. I want to show her support for helping us out. Guys, you have been fantastic. We love you guys. Before we end here, I want to play this little interview from Chelsea from California, and then we'll come back and end this thing. Okay, I am joined by a listener who reached out to me for some help. This is Chelsea from out in California. She's been a listener to the show for a long time. She's one of our favorites. And when she asked for help, I didn't really know what I could do since I really am not an expert in this field, but I thought I had some people I could put her in contact with, and the rest of it we'll get into as we get into the conversation. First of all, welcome Chelsea to the show. Hey, Chelsea.
Hey, thank you.
You're more than welcome. So let's start off with why you sent me basically a request for help. Tell me a little bit about what was going on in the situation with your house.
All right. Well, it first started, we just moved in about 3 weeks ago. And, you know, we moved in and it was beautiful. It was bright, no bad feelings. And I was really thrown off when, you know, the incident started happening because there was no bad with the house at all. But I guess the first thing that happened was I was taking a shower and I saw someone walk in, and I have a white curtain so you can see people, you know, the full body. And, you know, I called out to my husband and I asked if that was him, and he answered me from the living room. And so that was the first instance where I was like, okay, this is not right and something's going on. But I think a couple days later, I was sleeping, and side note, I have night terrors. I sleepwalk, I sleep talk. So anything to do with sleeping, my husband's used to me waking up crying, screaming. So that's not anything out of the norm. But one night I was sleeping and I just woke up really, really scared. And I was awake, fully awake, and I open my eyes and there is just this huge black person mass. I don't know what it was, but it scared me really bad, and I felt very, very threatened. And so I started screaming, you know, because I was scared and there was something over me, and my husband turns over to kind of comfort me because he thought I was just having another night terror. But he said that when he looked over, he saw just a face above me. And he is a skeptic. He doesn't really truly believe in this stuff. You know, he's never really had anything happen like this. So for him to confirm it to me that there was something over me, and it was exact timing of me seeing it and screaming and feeling very, very threatened. He didn't tell me this until the next day, though, because he didn't want to freak me out and, you know, worsen the situation. But so I reached out to you, Jerry, and you put me in contact with Wendy.
Yeah, let's stop there for a second, because I want to ask you a quick question. So your husband sees this thing. Now, when he told you mm-hmm. what he saw, did it match up to what you were seeing at that time?
Not exactly. I saw just a black mass. You know, I didn't see a face. I didn't see anything. But he saw a face over me. And it wasn't like on the side of my bed or anything. It was up over me, you know, as I'm laying down and just really, really close to my face.
So was it only a face that he saw? Was there any other part of it, or was it just like a face right there floating by itself?
All he said was a face above me. He didn't really say that there was, you know, more to it or anything. But yeah, that's all he saw was the face, and what I saw was just a big black mass.
Okay, so then you reached out to me, and at first I really didn't have a clue what to do, but then I thought, well, if you just moved into the house and there's issues, maybe it's a matter of just getting the house cleansed or maybe some kind of protection. And I thought about, we had a listener that actually came down to our house from Wisconsin, a couple of listeners. But during the course that we were here and enjoying stuff, she started talking about protection and houses and what she does to protect. And I knew that was something she was really into, so I thought, well, I don't know anything else to do, but it sounds like this might be a good start. So I put you in contact with Wendy. And so kind of give the listeners an idea of what you and Wendy talked about as far as some suggestions and where that took you.
Okay, well, she started out with, you know, saging our house and that I needed to figure out where the activity was mostly focused. And that was in our master room and in our bathroom. And so she suggested that I, you know, close it up, and I really have to, she said, make a light something like a candle or some sort of light that I have to put in the middle of the room. And I just have to, you know, be stern and make it known that it's my house. And really, she just explained that I have the power to get rid of it. But I started out with the saging, and that's the next story when I had the lady come and sage my house.
So let's talk about that then. So you got some ideas, and then you contacted somebody to come to the house and do some things. How did this person come to be, as far as how did you know about this person, or how did you know who to turn to in that situation?
Well, it's a coworker's sister, and me and that coworker always talk about this kind of stuff, the podcasts and everything, you know. And she told me, when I started talking to her about it, I told her, I was like, you know, I really need help with the saging because I've never done it. And my dad had done saging before and he had a really bad experience with it. So I was nervous about going through with it myself just because I've never done it before. But she told me that her sister does saging and that she would help me out no problem. So she came actually, I think, the next day to come into my house. And, you know, as she pulls up, she comes up to my steps and she tells me, you know, Chelsea, I've been here before 8 years ago. And I was like, oh no, like just confirmed already again. and she said that her friend used to live here and it was a completely different house. They gutted the entire house and remodeled it before we moved in. But 8 years ago, her friend lived here and she would always talk about how her house is really haunted and that it focused in the back room, which is our master bedroom. So she never talked about anything like whatever I saw, you know, the black mass, but other stuff such as an old lady in the hallway, children's handprints on the windows, and just really bad energy in the master bathroom. And when the girl came in to do the saging, when she was done, she was like telling my friend, which she didn't tell me this personally because she didn't want to freak me out even more because I was already in my head, you know. But she said that when she was saging our master bathroom in our closet, that it was really bad energy there. Like she started sweating and she was very, very shaky. And yeah, so she did the saging and it seems to be okay right now. I haven't had any like really bad feelings, but then again, I do have my dogs in here with us now and, you know, So,
were you having any problems with the dogs not wanting to come in, or any signs from them that there was some instances going on that were, might have been a little strange?
Well, we didn't have our dogs here yet at the time, before the staging. They came here after.
Okay.
But I do have rabbits, and my rabbit was completely acting out of character. He was thumping all night, and they usually do that when they're really agitated. And, you know, he just couldn't relax. He couldn't lay down or anything. And that was for a good 2 weeks that he was like that. And after the staging, after she staged them and everything, he laid down like no problem.
So that's
pretty
cool.
So he was more relaxed.
Yeah. So I know a couple of days passed. Things seemed like they might be getting better. I'm sure there was some hope that's, mm-hmm. you know, everything was gone. But then you had another incident that might seem minor to some people, but it seemed symbolic to you. So let's talk about that incident.
With my owl statue?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I woke up one morning and my son, he goes to a Catholic school and they had a church sale. And he came home with this little owl statue, and it's a family of three. And we, in the past, we had named it, you know, the dad, the son, and the mom. Well, one morning I woke up and I noticed that the mom was broken off and placed face down away from the statue. And that just really just gave me an eerie feeling, just because why the mom? You know, why? And it just, the way it was broken off, it was perfectly broken off. If it had just done it itself, you know, because it's in the bathroom, there's moisture in the air and everything, it wouldn't be as far away as it was.
Right.
You know.
And you sent me a picture of this so the listeners can get an idea. It's basically mm-hmm. like a mirror that has the statues on top of it. Mm-hmm. Correct? So it's one of those little things you see a lot of times around Christmas time or stuff. It's just a little shaped mirror and it's got the statues sitting on top of it. And this one was completely off. But like you said, instead of it, if it would have fallen off, or it would have been right there beside it, but it was laying away from it.
Exactly. And face down.
Well, it's like I told you, I can't imagine, you're such a sweetheart. I've been talking to you for, I guess, probably about a year now. And,
yeah.
You know, I've doesn't seem like you've got a bad bone in your body. I couldn't imagine anything having an issue with you, but hopefully it was just some kind of a weird coincidence.
Yeah, I hope so. It feels very personal. You know, everything that's been going on, it just seems to be really focused around me, which I would prefer it to just be, you know, focused around me, because we have a 7-year-old son that, you know, it starts messing with him. We gotta book it. You know, right now I want to take care of it before it moves on to other things.
Now, have you been in contact with the lady who used to live there?
No, not personally. I've been trying to get her to write you so that she can tell you her experiences here, but, my coworker, it's her sister's friend, so she's been talking with her and talking about the experiences she's had. And, you know, she told her another rumor, which this isn't a confirmed thing, but Orville has a lot of, have you ever heard about the Orville Dam?
No.
Okay, well, it took a lot of work and a lot of people died. And they have a lot of unmarked graves from the dam workers. And the girl, I think her name's Jenna. The girl that lived here, she said that she was told that the field that's right next to our house was one of those graves, the graveyard that was removed.
Well,
so
I mean, that would kind of maybe make sense why there would be issues from one family to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where do you go from here?
Well, I contacted our priest, and I'm hoping to have him come out here and bless the house, because right now it seems to have calmed down, but I'm just waiting. It's kind of hard to be firm and positive with, you know, it really scared me. It scared me really bad, and it's hard to be brave because I felt so threatened. And like listening to all the stories on your podcast, and you know, I'm a big fan of all this stuff. And I was, you know, in my head, I'm like, oh, if that ever happened to me, I'll be fine. But nope, I noped real fast.
Well, you had said when you reached out that when you started having these experiences, that you felt, like a heaviness and a real bad, like a depression type situation. Like it just was really gloomy for you. As soon as you would come home and be in the house, has that changed?
It has to a point. I think that right now I'm just really in my head, scared, you know, but it definitely lifted a lot since we had it staged. But before that, it was very, very just a heavy feeling and just a sadness that I was carrying around with me, you know, and it was only a couple of days, but it felt like a long time. You know, that feeling just wasn't going away. And it was scaring me because, you know, I can't do that. I'm a mother, you know, I'm a wife. I have to pull it together. But it was really, really hard for me.
Well, and, you know, I hope everything changes for you and stays going on the better path that it has started right now. Because, like I said, I know you got a sweet family. You and your husband both listen to the show and both, you know, on the groups that we have and all that. So, I mean, like I said, never heard anything bad come out of any of your guys' mouth. You're just always super nice and whatever you can do to help anybody else. And so I know what kind of people you are, and hopefully that's what overcomes in this whole thing.
I sure hope so. And I'm really grateful to you guys for reaching out back and helping me out, because it's hard to talk about with other people, especially non-believers. It's, you know, the negative feedback and everything, but just how open you guys were to me, it really meant a lot.
No, it's no problem at all. Chelsea, I hope things get better really quick for you, and say hi to your husband and little boy.
Thank you. I will.
All right, darling. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
So Chelsea's story is a little on the creepy side, huh?
Yes, very creepy.
She's a sweetheart, though,
and
I hope they get this thing worked out
Me
with
too.
Them, because there's nothing worse than moving into a home. You're excited. You just bought a house, and then you think something like this is going wrong. You can't even enjoy it. That's not the experience you hope
no,
for.
No, you sure don't.
Since this live event went so well, we do have some others coming up. The next one, even though the tickets aren't on sale yet, they will be in the next week, but it's going to be July 28th. In Indianapolis, Indiana. It's going to be at 7 o'clock, and it's going to be at a place called Wave One Studios in downtown Indy. But I'll get you all the details as we go. Tickets will be $10 a piece, just like this last one. And we're going to have Justin Rimmel from Mysterious Circumstances and Shane Waters from Out of the Shadows podcast. This is going to be super fun. This will be the biggest event that we've done. Because this place wants to do it right. They're going to get sponsorship out there. They're going to advertise it as well as all the shows. And they're expecting us to be able to pull in maybe 150 to 200 people. This is a cool room that's designed for these types of events. And we're excited about it that they actually came to us and said, hey, let's put this together. And it's going to be a blast. So as soon as I got the event set up, I'll start putting it out a little more. Nashville, we're looking at October 20th. We still do not have a location. Got a couple of places that I'm looking at. I want to try to tie that with a tour, and we're looking at places that are close to the Bellwitch Cave, and we're also looking at maybe Loretta Lynn's Haunted Plantation. So I'll know more. Hopefully we can tie it with a tour, but we may not be able to. Not all situations are as good as what Waverly was, where you got it there, but we might be able to get something going. I know when we did the event in Cincinnati, we didn't have it tied to a tour, but everybody still had a good time. And then a lot of people made the trek on their own out to Bobby Mackey's because it was only about a half hour away. So, guys, we love you. We never underestimate, and we never underappreciate you guys. So just remember that, and we'll talk to you soon.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.